Hello and welcome to our program, 10 Lessons Learned, where we talk to business people, journalists, artists, authors, attorneys, professors, leaders and luminaries from all over the world. My name is Steve Van Der Zee and I'm your host. I'm based in Phoenix, Arizona, in the beautiful Grand Canyon state, where I'm also known as the Dutchman in the desert. Our guest today is Per Ostrom. Per is a global marketing expert, I would like to say a marketing guru, working for a company named Chief Outsiders. Based in Tennessee, Per applies his 30 years of international commercial marketing profit and loss leadership experience into working as a so-called fractional chief marketing officer with private and privately held, private equity-owned industrial and business-to-business service companies. Born and raised in Sweden, Per came to the United States years ago to get his MBA degree. He likes to tackle complex business issues as he drives for practical results. By the way, that's something he learned while he served in the Swedish Army as commanding officer of an Arctic infantry unit. Thank you for your service. Oh. Per Ostrom is also the author of a book named Selecting a Strategy for Market Leadership. You can learn more about Per Ostrom on our website, 10lessonslearned.com. Hello, Per. How are you? Nice. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, good. Good, Siebe. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's wonderful. I look forward to our conversation about your 10 lessons. I was also curious, and perhaps it's something that is relatively new, but you work as a fractional chief marketing officer. That's kind of a new concept. What does that mean?
It's a lot easier than it sounds. I work as a CMO part-time for several companies at any one time. So it's a nice way for smaller and growing companies to get access to a lot of experience and knowledge without having to pay, you know, a full-time salary and benefits.
Yeah, and it's a relatively new concept. Now, when I think of marketing, with all due respect, what is, in your definition, the purpose of marketing? Is it more than just trying to convince people to buy products and services? I'm sure it is, but how would you define the purpose of marketing?
I define marketing pretty broadly. To me, marketing is understanding what people need and then develop and sell them what they need at the right price. And if you do it that way, then you will not end up in a situation where you try to convince people to buy something, but you come up with something that they really want and they really need.
The research part, understanding what people need or are looking for. And well, that in itself, obviously, is quite a discussion with new technologies that apply to so many people. And sometimes people are not even aware of what's available. And we have seen that, and I'm sure we will continue to see that. But that's an interesting element, I think, of marketing. Now, in the lessons that you're going to share with us, there's a lot of wisdom in there. But I also like to ask you, is there perhaps a lesson in your life or in your career that you would like to teach yourself if you were 30 years old today?
Yeah, there is actually. When I went to college, I opted for a business degree. And part of it had to do with my interest in marketing and selling. And my family, since the 1700s, are every other generation merchants or school teachers. So I think we have it in our DNA. And a marketer is obviously a combination of the two, right? But all joking aside, had I known then what I know now, I would have gone for an engineering degree rather than a degree in business or the humanities, just because the engineer's way of approaching problems and looking at the world is so applicable to any type of job, any type of situation. But it seemed to me like a lot of studying and a lot of math, you know, so that was a big reason I went for business instead.
Yeah, now I'm thinking about the fact that quite a few people have, as I would say, multiple careers. I started out in international banking, ended up for the last more than 20 years involved with coaching and executive search. My banking experience has been very helpful still today, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I realize what you're saying. And on the other hand, maybe it was very beneficial, right, to start in one area and over time gain more knowledge about the engineering part. But yeah, that makes sense. Makes sense. Good lesson to share. I appreciate it. Let's take a look, if you're ready, to look at your 10 lessons. All right. We'll start with lesson number one. And it's a quote. Cast down your bucket where you are, take what you have, and do the best with it. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, it's a quote actually from Booker T. Washington, a historical figure in the U.S. that I admire very much. Born a slave, he ended up educating himself and becoming an advisor to presidents, a man of immense integrity and immense wisdom. And I think what speaks to me directly is the second part of that, really. Take what you have and do the best with it. Because it is a rough world out there, right? And if you have a career in business, you really have to look after yourself. Nobody is going to help you and push you forward. Yes, you will have mentors, you will have bosses, you will have colleagues that are going to be helpful and nice. But you really have to kind of drive your own destiny. And this is probably not clearer anywhere than in the US, right? Which is part of the reason why I came here. You know, having grown up in Sweden, which is a little bit of a nanny state, it's getting better, but it was a little bit of that cradle to grave mentality. Whereas here in the US, you really could, if you worked hard and if you set your mind to it, you really could improve your situation. And yes, there are many social issues and political problems in the US, but I think the fundamental is still there, that you can still improve your situation by taking what you have and do the very best with it. And that's always going to work better than sitting around and blaming someone else or circumstances or bad luck. If you want to be successful, it's better to go to school and study and get a job, any job, and do your very best. It's a lot better than buying a lottery ticket every week and waiting for that, you know, $1 million prize.
Wow. You're raising so many topics in my mind, Per. First of all, Booker T. Washington, indeed, highly impressive and quite amazing what he did in his life. The fact that you and I are both from Europe, countries that were taking care of people. You know, we have the phrase in the United States, it takes a village, you have to help each other. And at the same time, there are certain limitations when you live in those societies. United States, the land of opportunity. You got to do it. You got to make it as an individual. And at the same time, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but when the political climate gets a little heated, I think many foreign-born individuals in this country say, this is a great country. This has incredible opportunities. And we're grateful to be here and to be part of it. The opportunities to do that, and going back again to the quote that you're using from Booker T. Washington, I think that's a very powerful start. Very, very interesting. Lesson number two, manage by objectives, delegate, decentralize. Yeah. And I thought the boss was always right.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's the way people thought in the 1950s. No, and curiously enough, this leadership philosophy is something I learned and got to practice when I was in the Swedish Army. You know, it's an army of conscripts, right? So it's citizen soldiers. Everyone gets called up. They get a gun and they do their year of military service. And in order for this to work, because you have the car dealer and you have the alcoholic and you have the school teacher, they all have to go, right? And we all have to do it. So in order for this to work, you have to have a management system, a leadership system that really motivates people, right? And brings out the best in people and lets people use their skills. So they use this approach they call Auftragstaktik in German, right? There really is no good English word for it, mission control or mission command, maybe. But it's very similar to management by objectives in business. So rather than giving people detailed information, detailed instructions, this is how you do it. You let people know what the objectives are, what the desired outcome is. And then you give people freedom to use their own education, their own skills in order to get the job done. And as long as things are progressing in the right direction, you really don't meddle and interfere a whole lot. You ask for some reports so you know what's going on, but you really don't breathe down people's necks or look over their shoulder, right? Of course, unless something starts, you know, driving into the ditch or going off the rails, then you might have to help somebody and coach them a little bit, bring them back on track. But it's so much better than having, you know, a hierarchy of bosses barking orders and telling everyone what to do. There's a live example right now and the war between the Ukraine and Russia, right? The Ukrainians use much more of a management by objectives approach, and the Russians are very, very hierarchical and very
top down,
very order giving. And I mean, we could just see who's routing who in the battlefield. And it's the same thing in business. It really is.
Yeah. Of course, it's difficult sometimes to change systems and cultures because it is part of the culture, right? But I think it's an important point to raise that there is an alternative, and indeed managed by objectives also in the United States, of course, can make a lot of sense. And I feel very comfortable with what you're saying, because indeed, again, coming from Europe, that's typically how we look at it. But very interesting. Now, indeed, you served in the Swedish Army. Lesson number 3, officers eat last. Turn the org chart upside down and be a servant leader. Wow. You already mentioned your background serving in the Army. Is that something that has been with you, stuck with you your whole life?
It has. It definitely has. It's a lot of the things you learn at the Officers Academy has to do with scouting around, observing what's going on around you. Take that information, process it, and use it to make decisions that help you meet your goals, solve your mission, right? And a military mission in that perspective is just the same as a goal in business, right? If you run a small business unit and you need to grow it from $1 million to $2 million in sales, you need to look at the competitors, you need to look at the economy, you need to look at potential customers, and then kind of evaluate all of this and roll it into a action plan and make things happen in order to get to that. And by far the best way to do it, like I just mentioned, is management by objectives. You get everyone on the bus and everyone pointing in the same direction, everyone pulling in the same direction, and you will be able to do it. And in order for your organization to perform at its best, they have to be well-fed and well-rested. You know, that's true for soldiers and it's true for people in an organization. I mean, even Napoleon said that an army marches on its stomach, right?
Well, true. However, I recognize a difference serving in the army where there is danger, there is, you know, violence, whether you are on offense or defense. And in a business society, business community, that level of pressure, of course, is different.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah, absolutely. But I think the underlying philosophy really is the same, or at least very, very similar, that a good boss takes care of his people, makes sure that they have the equipment, the training, the software that they need, that they have the health insurance. They don't have to worry about getting sick or breaking an arm. They get enough vacation, you know, so people can function and they can work at their optimal level.
Well, and at the way you put it, officers eat last, I think that says it all, right? That's exactly, they don't put themselves up front. They are behind the people that serve and look out for them. Lesson number 4, shut up and listen, really listen. Okay, Per, I'll be quiet.
Yeah, this is an insight that somebody taught me many years ago, that physiologically, we are not designed to talk and listen at the same time. So when you're talking, you really can't listen. So in order to hear what's going on, you know, in a staff meeting, in a presentation, in a job situation where there's people sitting around the table or standing around in the hallway, you have to sometimes be quiet and listen and really try to listen, kind of pass the words. What's the tone of voice? What's the underlying themes here? Because in any organization, there is a conversation going on, but there's also a behind the scenes conversation. And those two better be the same. Otherwise, you're in trouble. Because if you have one conversation around company goals and we're going to get this done, and in reality, people are already resigned or they're gossiping or they're talking bad about each other or bad about you or the competitors, that's not a good and healthy organization. So a great deal of the time when you have the opportunity to speak, you should take the opportunity not to and instead listen. Let others do the talking.
I think it's a very important, something that I have used and had to use many times if I have a tendency to talk too much. This is something that I apply also when I coach people sometimes. Not everybody that needs this, but to be aware, sometimes I compare it to a traffic light. When you're driving your car and the light is green, you keep going and listen to music or talk to people in your car. If the light turns to yellow and red, you know you got to stop, right? Mm-hmm. Your brain has been trained. And it is definitely possible for people to teach themselves to listen more and talk less. Mm-hmm. And the value is immense by just listening to people. And it's a very good exercise to apply, I want to say, for all of us. Yeah, I like it. Shut up and listen. Really listen. That's a good one. Lesson number 5, be positive, deal swiftly with issues. Please explain.
Yeah. When dealing with people, almost in any kind of situation, in a club where you might be a member or on the golf course, or if you manage people at work, or if you lead a youth group in church or something, the fundamental impulse of people is to do good, is to be effective and be nice with others and get things done, right? And a manager's role or a leader's role is to allow people to do what they want to do and to do what needs to be done. And then once in a blue moon, there will be a bad egg. Somebody that's miscast in the role, maybe it's a salesperson that got promoted to sales leader, and he really doesn't have the skill set to manage others. He's really good at managing customers, but he's not good at managing other salespeople. Situations like that can happen. And then you have to deal with it quickly, because if you step back and you kind of think that this is going to take care of itself, or it really isn't that bad, and, you know, I don't have anyone else to do the job, now you start to make excuses for not acting. And if you're a leader, you have to interfere when something goes off the rails. And that action has to be swift and it has to be decisive. So if somebody is acting up or somebody is underperforming, deal with it right away. Talk to them, coach them, you know, send them to a training program if that's what's needed. Give them less to do or different things to do. Move them to a different department. And if people are absolutely toxic, and I mean, we see this happen sometimes in organizations, then it's better to let them go, to let them find some other place to work where they might, you know, fit in better and be more happy. Unfortunately, you got to try and fix it, but if you can't, you got to replace the person.
Yeah, I can see from a management perspective. At the same time, sometimes people deal with issues, maybe not even directly related to their jobs, mm-hmm. but it affects them. And as a manager, again, you have to show the empathy and understand, right? And in some cases, even if you have a positive mind, mm-hmm. sometimes you have to make harsh decisions. Different than what you were saying about management, if I think about people that are in the process of looking for a job, mm-hmm. and they go through that process, and well, maybe it is hard to find the right job, maybe they go through an interview and the outcome is negative, it's sometimes hard to deal with that. And yet, I would say, if you are dealing with people in a tough situation, to encourage them, and in a positive way, obviously, to say, hey, you didn't get this job, but there's another job out mm-hmm. there. No doubt you'll find it and you'll land it. So that positive aspect, sometimes it's tough. Sometimes yeah. it's tough for individuals yeah. especially. But yeah. what I like in what you're saying, if I understand it correctly, from a management point of view, managing people, managing organizations, to stay positive. And you also indicate deal swiftly with issues. So mm-hmm. don't let it linger and say, well, we'll come back to it. No, it's mm-hmm. a problem. It's got to be taken care of. Yeah, I like that. Thank you for that one. We're talking today with Per Ostrom, and Per is a highly successful global marketing expert with an experience, fractional chief marketing officer experience, sharing his 10 lessons learned. I want to thank our affiliate partner, Audible. Audible is an amazing tool to experience our program, 10 Lessons Learned, but also books and other podcasts, allowing you to build a library of knowledge all in one place. You can start your free 30-day trial by going to audibletrial.com/10lessonslearned. Again, that's audibletrial.com/10lessonslearned, all lowercase, to get your free 30-day subscription. All right, moving all along. Right. Lesson number 6, what makes us different makes us better. I like that. Please go ahead.
Yeah, again, from a work perspective, if you're in a situation where you can influence who gets hired, maybe you participate in interview processes, maybe you're a hiring manager, maybe you work in HR, maybe you have, you know, other ways of influencing. One of the hallmarks of strong and effective organizations is that they are very diverse. If you go to Google headquarters in California and you look at the people there, it's going to look like a rainbow. It really will, right? All ages, all ethnicities, all national backgrounds, you'll hear different languages spoken. And that same positive effect is true in smaller organizations. So like now when I work as a fractional CMO, if I come into a company, that's one of the first things I look for. Are all of the people white middle-aged men? Or is there, you know, are there women there? Are there minorities there? Are there young people and older people? And how do they interact with each other? Because just the fact that you have people of different background working on the same team, jointly collaborating, solving problems, makes the quality of the problem solving so much better. And it's also more fun because you get exposure to completely different ways of looking at things and you know, different ways of analyzing problems, even different ways of shaping or formulating the issues that are to be solved.
Bear, I have to ask you, how many countries have you visited? Do you know?
Oh, goodness.
There's the answer.
I think I have visited and or worked in 45 countries, something like that.
45. So my next question is, does that mean you know all the cultures and behaviors in 45 countries?
No. I mean, obviously, national cultures are very different. But on some basic level, we're all the same, right? We all get up in the morning and we all go to work and we want to do our best. We want to learn. We want to be effective. And if you start at that very, very basic micro level, then you can usually get along with people. And then, of course, you have to understand the finer points, right? And even from very similar countries, it can be very different. You go to France and it's very hierarchical, right? And the bosses, even if you have an open conversation around the table, at the end of it, the boss has to kind of sum it all up and say, okay, this is how we do it. In Sweden, everyone sits around the table and talks forever until there's consensus. But then you don't have to do anything else because everyone is already on board. And you come to the US where there's a great informality. You use the first names and you say hi in the corridor and you might sit next to the CEO and eat lunch, right? But at the same time, there is a hierarchy in the decision making. So it is different in every place and you have to kind of feel your way around a little bit. But at the end of the day, everyone goes home again and they have a family and they watch television. So it is and it is the same.
Maybe on purpose you left out the Netherlands, but in the Netherlands, if you have two Dutch people in one room, you get at least three opinions.
Oh, okay.
But I think in that and you know, 45 countries, that's more than what I have visited. And well, I've lived in 4 countries, but I look at it also, Per, and I'm curious how you look at it. The more you learn, the more you see and experience, the more you realize how little you know. There's so much more to learn and explore. And well, unfortunately, you know, our life is not unlimited, but keep an open mind. And when I think about what makes us different, makes us better, there is so much to explore that we don't know. We're learning about it. So, yeah, I think what makes us different makes us better in different concepts, I think is very, very helpful. I'm glad you shared that lesson. Moving along, lesson number 7, work smart, use technology. I'm already getting a smirk on my face because I look forward to our conversation, but work smart, use technology. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Western countries, or I should say industrial countries, have progressed very fast in 250 years because of technology, right? So once the steam engine was invented, we could build factories. And once we had factories, we could mass produce things. So now, you know, you or I could afford to buy a car, right? Instead of just 16 rich people in Holland, right? So technology is kind of what carries society forward in many ways. And then it's up to us, of course, to build a ideological superstructure on top of the economy, right? To make sure that it's a just and fair society.
Yeah.
In order to get all the good things done that we want to do, we would be silly not to use technology and not to use the progress with technology. Let me use an example. Only maybe 10 years ago, I was involved a lot in selling construction equipment. So you would call on construction sites. You know, these would be fenced in areas. You walk through the gate and there is a office trailer there, right? You knock on the door and here's the supervisor or the foreman working that construction site. He would sit there next to his computer on a desk. You know, you bring a box of donuts, you sit down and you talk to them. How's everything? You know, and oh, by the way, if you need to rent an excavator, you know, we have them. So just give me a call and we'll have it here in 2 hours. Now it's his son working the same job and he still has the office there, but he's never there. He's got his office in his pocket. He's got a smartphone and he will look at his smartphone at your app and he would place the order for the excavator on your app, right? And then you deliver it 2 hours later. If you try and come look for him with donuts, you're not going to find him. And they're probably not going to let you through the gate even because of security concerns and other things that have changed in 10 years. So if you want to rent out your excavator, you better have a really good presence on the internet, right? And you need to have a really, really good website and an app that's easy to use that where somebody can just do this, you know, and order whatever they need. So it's a different world altogether. And I mean, think of video conferencing, right? What happened during the pandemic? People started talking like we do now. We would sit to each other on a computer. And of course, it's not as good as or as nice or enjoyable as sitting face to face across from a table, right? But you're in Arizona, I'm in Tennessee, and it's working fine.
Here we are. Yeah.
Right. I take a lot of notes in my job, right? Because my job, a great part of my job is to learn new things and to quickly internalize new things and analyze them. So I used to take notes on yellow legal pads, right? And then I come back to the hotel room at night and I type them all because I want to keep them on my computer. Well, now I have an iPad and I have an app on my iPad that understands my handwriting and turns it into typing. So when I take notes, I just write on my iPad and then I spend, you know, a few minutes at night kind of correcting spelling and things like that. And I can file and save my document. So I have everything at my fingertips. I have it on my phone. I have it on my iPad. And when I'm at my desk, I have it on my computer. And it just makes life so much easier. And I am so much more productive now than I am even 5 years ago because of technology.
It's a great point again. And I appreciate you raised that in your lessons. And moving along to lesson number 8, I'm curious about that. Get elected to something. What do you mean?
Yeah. I think at some point in somebody's life, you should run for office. You know, it can be something small. It can be like be a chairman of a committee in your church or synagogue, right? Or it could be to be on the board of your homeowners association. It could be something more ambitious, like run for school board or something like that. Because it's an opportunity to do something for others, truly do something for others, not just for yourself. And it's an opportunity for you to channel, you know, the will of other people and be their representative in the purest sense of the word, right? But it also works the other way. So if you're on a school board, and I happen to have served on a couple of school boards in Sweden before I came here, but sometimes you end up with a situation like a budget situation or here's a school building that's dilapidated and it'll just cost so much to repair it. So it's cheaper to tear it down and build a new one. And oh, by the way, when we build a new one, we should build it where the kids live now, not where they lived 50 years ago when the old building was done. So you have to bring this message back to parents and they can be furious. No, that school is not going to be torn down because I went there and my grandma before me, you know, and you get this emotional investment of people and everything. So that's really interesting. And it helps you grow to have to deal with those kinds of issues. And it's also an opportunity to do something without getting paid for it, right? So this is something you do out of interest for others. But there are things in it for you. You learn to negotiate a lot, right? You learn to compromise. And skills like that are useful at work. They're useful in your family. They're useful in whatever social circles where you are. But running for office or some, you know, getting elected to something, I think is very, very enriching.
I'm very interested in what you're saying because I have served in the army. The Dutch army was mm-hmm. mandatory. I have served in different capacities. And yes, I like it. I believe in it. And there's no money to be made. But when I think of, I don't want to say the reality in which we live, many people that I can think of, no matter their age or where they are in their lives, I don't want to do that. I don't want to spend time. I don't make money doing that. Let someone else do it. And then I can criticize that person, right? So what will motivate people other than listening to your lesson and say, get elected to something? What would motivate people to say, I need that. I need to learn that skill and I'm going to serve in a public role without making money, let's say, mm-hmm. because I will learn something. How would you convince people to do that when they're completely not motivated?
Yeah, I will try and teach them lesson number one. Take what you have to do the best with it, right? Because you have innately abilities that you haven't developed, right? And getting elected to something, you know, having to campaign and debate and all of that stuff, thinking on your feet, all of those things, they help round you out. They help fill you in as a person. And you don't know it until you tried it, right? And you might end up, which happens half of the time, right? If you're debating against somebody else, on the average, you lose the debate half the time, right? So you come home at night and you have a black eye and a bloodied nose, figuratively, right? And you have to think about, okay, what did I do wrong and how can I do better next time? So you do help and you do improve yourself by helping others. And paying it forward does feel kind of nice as well. You know, if you help someone, if you mentor someone, or if you represent someone that can't represent themselves, it actually is kind of a nice feeling too.
I want to use what you just said in a way. You don't know it until you know it, right?
Yeah.
It's perhaps difficult to explain to people and say, oh, if you do that, that's going to work for you. Well, maybe yes, maybe no. But people who have done it, who have experienced, they look back at what they did. And there are certain elements that they say, look what I was able to do, how I was able to contribute. And you're not saying, hey, everybody has to give me credit for that. Again, servant leadership. Mm-hmm. But it is contributing to society, to the community, without holding your hand out. And it makes you feel good. And that's the value of that lesson, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, very interesting. I'm looking at lesson number 9. Into the woods, the power of peace, quiet, and man's best friend. Please explain.
Yeah. Let me take half a step back and give some context. You know, I grew up in Sweden, but not just anywhere in Sweden, but in Lapland. So all the way up north, right? Small town, 100 miles north of the Arctic Circle. So short summer, long winter, midnight sun in the summer, right? Arctic night in the winter. So we never see the sun, but wilderness as long as you can see, right? So there was forest and there were mountains not far from where I used to live. And because this was so far north, there would be a tree line, right? So the trees will only grow up to a certain height on the mountain. And once you're above there, you're up on the Bald Mountain, right? And you have an endless view. So there was a mountain right nearby where I live. You could easily hike that. And from the peak of that mountain, you could see maybe a tenth of the surface of Sweden. And Sweden is not small. It's the size of California, you know, the surface. It's not a small country geographically. So anyway, so I used to really enjoy hiking in the mountains, and I still do. I live right next to the Smoky Mountains here, but there's no tree line here, so there is no gorgeous view, not in the same way. But just the act of walking in the woods, you know, walking along a trail, being quiet, listen to the sounds of nature, smell what's going on, right? Stop, look at the water, feel the water, take your boots off for a little bit, soak your feet. Things like that instantly kind of revives you and puts you back in touch with not just nature, but back in touch with yourself. And I think especially for me, who grew up in an environment like that. I mean, in the winter, we'll go skiing every night, every weekend, right? In the summer, we'll go riding our bikes out in the woods and go fishing every night because it never got dark, right? So nature was, I grew up so close to nature. So nature to me really is the pharmacy, right?
Yes. Well, it's so fascinating, Per, what you're saying. And as you know, growing up in the Netherlands, there are no mountains in the Netherlands. Yeah. So skiing in the Netherlands doesn't get you anywhere because there's no way to go. Plus, we don't get a lot of snow. But bicycling, for example, that's big. I look at it, yes, into the woods. And the way you describe it, I think that's makes a lot of sense. But to be out of where you are right now, to take a break, right? Whatever it is, indeed, the mountains, hiking, the ocean, the beach, whatever it is, it's so important for us human beings to allow yourself to take a break. Mm-hmm. And it does miracles, right? We all know that. I'm curious, by the way, you talk about man's best friend.
Yeah.
What comes to mind?
Dogs, of course. Growing up, we did not have dogs in my family for some reason. I'm not quite sure. When I met my wife-to-be, she had a dog, and I've been hooked ever since. There really is nothing better than walking your dog. It's nice to walk around the block where you live, but it's even nicer to be out in nature and go on long hikes because you develop this communication between you and this other animal, right? That's beyond words and beyond just giving orders or telling the poor dog what to do, right?
I had to check because I had a dear friend. He used to work for the zoo, and he had at his home a collection of rattlesnakes.
Oh, and no.
He was very concerned about the rattlesnakes living here in the Arizona desert.
Yeah.
So when you describe man's best friend, let's make sure. Okay, dogs. Could be something else, but no, that's good to know. And again, into the woods, take a break. Important for all of us. I'm moving along to lesson number 10. Per, we are at lesson number 10. And it's another quote, if I understand it correctly. Mm-hmm. If you're going through hell, keep going.
Winston Churchill said this. He said and done a lot of really interesting and amazing things. And it speaks to me because at some point in your life, things are going to look dark, right? And it's not going to look great. And chances are that you get all gloomy and that you really feel that, you know, I can't go on. You know, why am I doing this? This makes no sense. You know, I'm in the wrong career or something else is really eating you and not working out. And that's when it's really important to keep going. So there's nothing wrong with asking for help. There's nothing wrong with being stubborn and not giving up. And there's nothing wrong with staying focused because there is light at the end of the tunnel. There always is, right? Doesn't matter how dark things look, but they will get better. But in order to facilitate that, you have to keep moving. You have to keep moving. So, you know, and if you're in a job situation, talk to your boss, you know, see if they can give you less to do or extend that deadline, you know, if that's something that contributes. If you're just being, you know, sad and tired and all, there's nothing wrong with asking for professional help. And companies have those kinds of facilities these days. And just having friends, talking to friends and people you trust, people you can talk to. And then, of course, having a dog, you know, they never question you
or snake,
disappointed in you. Yeah, they always love you. And you can come home at 3 a.m. after being out drinking all night long and they love you just as much.
Have you had one or more people in your life that you would describe as a coach, someone that looked out for you?
Yeah, a couple of people that I would describe as a coach. And also, I've had several people that I kind of admire and try to emulate. And I think that's a really good way of improving your outlook is to think, you know, what would Pippi Longstocking do? You know, what would Siebe van der Zee do? and then try to do that, right?
Yeah,
because that allows you to step out of your own, you know, if your own thought process has ground to a halt, you can pretend to be somebody else. And how would that person do this?
And it applies, of course, to people that are early in their career to seek advice and guidance. If you are in the middle of your career, even when you are towards the end of your career, to get guidance from trusted sources, mm-hmm. and hopefully people that simply want to look out for you, right? Mm-hmm. They don't have an interest in your next step and say, okay,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
But simply looking out. And at least in my experience, you have to be somewhat lucky to find those people, or at least to mm-hmm. encounter. You don't find them. It happens. And it can happen. Of course, you have moved around quite a bit, also within the United States. When you move around or get a new job, sometimes your network changes. Mm-hmm. But to seek guidance, I think, is very, very important, especially when, according to the quote, if you're going through hell. That's when it matters. If things are going well, yeah, it's nice to get advice and et cetera. But when it's difficult, yeah, it's one of those lessons that I think we easily forget about.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, at this point, I'm curious, covering 10 lessons, I'm going to ask you, is there perhaps a lesson in your life that you have unlearned, that things that you have done for whatever a while, and then you said, I got to do it differently? Anything that comes to mind?
Yeah, and I'm going to contradict myself a little bit now. We were talking about education earlier. And when I was young, I used to think that education was so important for your career progression. And it is. It is in a couple of ways. That's when you learn your basic skills, right? So you have a skill that you can apply. You know, you know how to do marketing, or you know how to do accounting, or you know how to do finance if you work in a bank, right?
Yes.
But really what you need to know in order to progress your career, you learn on the job. You learn by doing. So the further along you are in your working life, the less valuable formal instruction, formal training, classroom training becomes.
Yeah.
So if you really want to have a good career progression and advance in your company and be promoted, rather than going to classes or taking courses, you should ask for new assignments. If you're in marketing, you should ask for a finance assignment. If you're in finance, you should ask if you can work in R&D, if, you know, within reason, right? Because if you learn about an organization, you learn about an industry and how it works, how things are made, how they're developed, how the plant works, you know, what's important in the factory, what's not. Rotate into HR, take an HR job. Rotate into sales, take a sales job. That's really how you learn, really truly learn how business works. And then, of course, it does help to read a book, and it does help to go to the occasional conference and, you know, maybe even to a one-week executive education class in AI or something specific, right? But really, you learn by doing, and you don't get good at something until you do it. And not once or twice, but 100 times.
Yes. I've read books from management experts, and one of the themes that always comes out, and you reflect on that very much in what you just said, energy, especially in a management position, you have to show initiatives, you have to explore. It's not just going to happen. Of course, as a manager, it's not just to have the energy, but to be able to energize the people that work with you, as you have discussed already. So those are very important points. I really think, Pierre, that you have taught me and our audience a lot of wisdom. And I want to thank you for that and for sharing your wisdom with our audience. It's much appreciated.
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to chat. I think this has been really, really instructive and interesting. And I wish we could go for another 2 hours.
I'll check with our producer. But no, listen, this was great. I'll make a few closing comments. You have been listening to our international program, 10 Lessons Learned. This episode is produced by Robert Hossery, and as always, we are supported by the Professional Development Forum. Our guest today is Pierre Ostrom, a highly successful global marketing expert and an experienced fractional Chief Marketing Officer, sharing his 10 lessons learned. And to our audience, don't forget to leave us a review or a comment. You can also email us at podcast@10lessonslearned.com. I hope you will subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And remember, this is a podcast that makes the world wiser and wiser, lesson by lesson. Thank you and stay safe.